Hello, this is your guest host, Andy Smerick of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. I'm filling in for Mike Petrilli, who is, as we speak, selling Michael Jackson t-shirts outside of the Staples Center. But fortunately, we have a regular co-host here, a man who may be the next governor of Alaska, Rick Hess.
Hey, Andy, how you doing, baby?
Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's always a joy. It's good to see you there instead of Sweet Chili, who's off sitting on his cheek somewhere.
Indeed. So what was your favorite Michael Jackson song?
You know, I always dug Man in the Mirror, baby.
Really?
Yeah, especially the video with like Mother Teresa and them. That was very touching.
Very moving, yes, that's for sure.
And We Are the World, man. You know who we wrote We Are the World with?
Yeah, Lionel Richie.
Yes! Good call. Jolene, my wife, had no clue. She was just totally flailing on that.
Oh, yeah, that's a tragedy. I'm a bigger Jackson 5 fan than I am in the later years. I Want You Back is just about the greatest song ever.
Yes, and when they did the medley on Ed Sullivan, that was tough stuff, man.
Those are the days.
They brought the love. Bringing the fun. Hey, now, our listeners may not know, today is a big show, a historic show.
It is. Someone is leaving us today. So actually, let's start that. We can get into things. But first of all, let's begin with Pardon the Gadfly with Christina, her very last show of all time.
Christina, sweet Stina. Where are you going, girl? Tell the listeners.
Going to business school at the University of Chicago.
So if they want to send their fan mail to you.
You can just send it to Fordham. My spirit will live on here.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know what will happen is Mike will hand it to Checker, who will make Mick scan it, and they will then e-fax it to you up at Chicago. It'll be an impressive thing to behold.
That's right. Fordham has moved into the 21st century. So are you boys ready to debate or what?
Ready to bring the thunder, dog.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Topic number one. Secretary Duncan seemed to stand up to the NEA on the topic of teacher quality last week when he addressed their annual conference. But did he go far enough, or was he still afraid to step on union toes?
So, in general, he said some pretty tough things. There was a little bit too much hand-holding and kumbaya singing. But the thing I found most interesting about the entire speech was he continues to use this line that we don't want to do reform to you or at you, we want to work with you. But every time he mentioned something tough, like tenure reform or seniority reform or performance pay, they booed him. So at some point, something has to give. Either we're going to work with them and not get any reforms, or we're going to have to do some things that they're not going to like. What's going to happen?
Andy, that's tough stuff, baby. I like the way you laid that out. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the takeaway, right? So people get excited when Duncan, you know, hits some of the right grace notes. He says, look, some of these old systems in place, the seniority provisions put in place, you know, decades ago, may have been appropriate given some of the inequities in place, but are hugely anachronistic, hugely problematic, and just destructive as all hell in today's labor market.
Right.
Problem is that Duncan spends a lot more time on the setup and explaining why these were once justified than he does simply asserting that it's got to change.
Right.
And so he, you know, does several sentences of setup, gives a sentence of payoff, gets booed for the payoff, and moves on. And this is considered speaking the truth to power. I mean, I'd hate to see what knee crawl and sycophantism looked like.
Well, it's true. I mean, his toughest line of the whole thing was actually at the end when he said that it just doesn't make sense. It's illogical to not have student performance play any role at all in teacher pay compensation. But then he actually began that sentence by saying, well, we have to be very careful about this. So at no point was he really willing to hit hard. Carte blanche, he always had to couch it somewhat.
You know, and substantively, the crazy thing for me is actually I agree with him. Right? I mean, I agree that you don't want to go overboard on how much you drive teacher compensation with student test score changes.
That's right.
But, frankly, if this is your big speech, year one Obama administration, you're going into the NEA, you're giving your big speech, it's kind of a tepid way to set up the point.
No doubt. All right. Next.
Let's talk about something else that's tepid. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick has put a school improvement plan in front of the state legislature. Its key measure involves the state takeover and reconstitution of 30 failing schools as readiness schools. But some Bay State reformers think the plan is just another incidence of adult-centric incrementalism and lacks the punch to make a difference. Are they right?
Yeah. You know, now, what's funny is when we say some Bay State reformers, you always know on Fordham Air USA that this means the Pioneer Institute. So
it's true, Rick,
that the Pioneer Institute is irate, but they've got calls to be irate. Tom Kane's study last year of charter schooling in Massachusetts found, you know, for instance, big effects at charter schools very modest effects of any at the pilot schools. Well, so what are they doing? What's Patrick pushing for?
More pilot schools.
Pushing for more pilot schools. I mean, and, you know, it add to this the fact that nobody really knows how to do turnarounds, and that the history of state takeovers is pretty damn depressing. You got to wonder why they think this is a better route than just raising the darn charter cap.
Yeah, Rick hit on, I think, all the right points here. So, in general, turnarounds don't work. Well, let's do turnarounds. In general, state takeovers don't work. Deval says, let's do that. In general, these charter lights, whether they're Horace Mann charters or pilot schools, don't work. So, they want to do more of those things. Now, the fascinating kind of lead that was missed on this in some of the articles is that actually part of the proposal that the governor's putting together might include a cap lift on charter schools with some hedging around the edges about this. But I mean, in general, if you want to get rid of your low-performing schools, you can close them down and start new ones, but they got to get rid of their cap if they want to do that. You think they will?
You know, that'll be interesting to see. And frankly, I got to say, if there was any state where I'd be interested in seeing state takeovers, it's Massachusetts, Mitch Chester's state soup, and Paul Revelle, Secretary of Ed. And those are two guys who I think pretty highly of.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The politics of this are going to be telling, and I guess we'll wait and see.
Well, what's really fascinating is if you remember a couple years ago when Nancy Grasmick tried to take over some schools in Maryland. This was a well-respected state superintendent who wanted to use NCLB to come take over these schools, and what happened? The city legislators from Baltimore stepped in and passed legislation to stop her. So just because Deval wants to do this doesn't necessarily mean the legislature will let him.
Boom.
All right, last one. The National Research Council recently reported that much more emphasis should be placed on math in preschool, a period usually focused on literacy. Does this make sense?
Sure.
Why not?
Kids like to count. In fact, I mean, right, if we think back to kind of the roots of preschool, right, we think back to Montessori and kindergarten, the rest of it, right, it was always about manipulatives, it's about colors, it's about objects. You know, why we want to focus wholeheartedly on literacy and not on other core academic skills, you know, it's probably too early to mess around with science. Any science instructor would probably be a debacle.
Yeah.
But, you know, teaching kids, as long as they're in preschool, teaching them basic numeracy sure seems to make reasonable sense.
The only worry I would have about this is, in general, our preschool programs aren't hitting the ball out of the park every time. So I'm just worried.
You're so generous. So right, they mostly bite. And so you're concerned that dilution will make them bite even worse.
Yeah, just because we add something onto something that's not working so well doesn't mean that it's going to get better.
This is our general theory of school reform. I don't feel
that's right. Add more and more and more. Eventually it'll get better.
But yeah, no, you're right. But there's no reason, I think, a priori to think that they would naturally do worse. I think it would, like always, right, it would depend on quality of the personnel who are doing this and whether the curriculum makes sense and how they're doing it.
And those are a lot of ifs.
But, you know, at the ideal level, the notion that we should do more numeracy preschool, what the hell? Makes sense.
I think we agree. All right, well, that's all, Christina. We're going to miss you. Good luck. Godspeed to you. All right, onward, upward. So let's move on with Amber.
Like the Irish adage, may you... walk along the road and find some nickels on the side.
Yeah, that's a famous Irish adage.
With that, Research Minute with Amber Winkler.
I wonder why I can't ever hear my Research Minute song anymore. It's like so low.
I always get so excited. Fiona Apple. It's good stuff.
I can't hear it.
What do you got for us
today,
Winkles?
What am I bringing this week? All right. We're always concerned with why American kids fail to keep up with kids in high-performing nations. This AIR report released earlier this summer gives us some answers. It compares the math performance from students in Massachusetts, who are the highest performers in the U.S., to students in Hong Kong, who are the highest performers in the world. It also compares the differences in what we ask each group to do assessment-wise. First, we learn that even though both groups are stellar, Hong Kong has more kids performing at the various very highest levels than does Massachusetts, 40% compared to 22%. Another is that even though the Hong Kong assessment and the MCAS cover the same topics, the Hong Kong test covers the topic number and measurement to a much greater degree, and this is the foundation for more advanced work in algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the analysis revealed that 86% of the Hong Kong assessment items, at least at grade 3, ask a child to construct a response to a math problem, meaning work it out longhand, with no multiple choice options, and put your answer in a fill-in-the-blank. Just 29% of Massachusetts items ask children to do this.
Calling Dr. Tom Lovelace.
The researchers close with a call for the U.S. to strengthen how we teach and test math, especially at the early grades, so we are able to perform at higher levels. I'd also add that we need to revisit how we pay for and make reliable open-ended test items, since numerous international experts have now called to our attention the drawbacks of too much reliance on multiple choice items. Done.
That's good work.
You could be on NPR nowadays.
Maybe. But I just really feel like we've heard this from Bill Schmidt. We've heard it from so many people now that, you know, we kind of went this other way with multiple choice when we got in this high-stakes environment, because we're just so worried about the reliability of these other formats. But, I mean, study after study after study shows that these other high-performing nations do a lot of this, you know, and I'm like, okay, we need to be doing something here. Maybe we swung a little bit too far.
All right, well, so this actually raises an interesting question, because Duncan said that he wants to use, what, $350 million of the Race to the Top to create new types, or to fund the creation of new types of assessments to go along with these common standards. Mm-hmm. So if he and Achieve and NJA were sitting here, what would you tell them about what these assessments should look like?
I mean, this report was really interesting. It gave you all the, it put a Massachusetts item right beside a Hong Kong item that measured the same skill and topic, and it just showed you, I mean, ours, the Massachusetts was like, you know, so-and-so Bobby has twice as much money as Candy, who has twice, you know, you've seen those kind of questions. Mm-hmm. But then the Massachusetts item was, you know, it was these empty boxes, and you had to figure out, you know, in order to figure out what the missing quotient was, you could do like three different ways to figure it out, you know, and kids had to show their work. But there was no like ABCD, I mean, there's no guessing to it. It's like big blank space, you fill it out, then there's this little blank at the bottom, put your answer, you know? I mean, so no guessing here. But anyway, it was interesting, the examples they gave. And I just think it showed even, you know, even our MCAS, which we have great, you know, respect for Massachusetts and what they're doing, but still some big differences in what these other high performing nations are doing in terms of how they test their kids.
Now, Andy the Andy here. You're our local expert on Race to the Top and what works and stuff. Here's just a question. Is it actually statutorily legal for Duncan to be saying that he wants to set aside $350 million in this way prior to any of the criteria or any of the competition?
Well, it definitely raises questions. I mean, the department can write criteria and have preferences in the application, but it was odd for them to say that they're going to set aside this money in advance. There's no statutory language saying that. So I guess what he's doing is telegraphing to people or to state, say, hey, if you put together a proposal that does this, I will have the money set aside to do it. It's very strange. I didn't expect that at all.
Hmm. Cool.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks. Very good work. All right. Let's move on. Stafford, are you up?
Hold on. Oh, no. The song.
That's the song of the week.
All right. So this is a big stretch. Huge stretch. But I was looking for a way to pay tribute to the King of Pop. So
Thriller.
We're all thrilled with the achievement of these kids in Massachusetts. Mm. So we have Thriller by Michael Jackson.
Ooh.
I believe it was 25 years ago. Is that right? 1983?
Sounds about right.
83 or 82, right? It was way back.
I thought Off the Wall.
Fantastic stuff.
See, we're dating ourselves now.
We're dating ourselves, baby. You know what there, Ams? You could have gone, because tests, test items are generally graded in black and white.
Uh-huh. I could have gone black and white. And you know what the other thing I was trying to do was that we want to beat Hong Kong one day, so I was going to do Beat It, but we didn't have the license for Beat It. Darn. Oh.
Or you could have been like, because all of this is about word problems, say.
Say. I don't think I know that one.
That's McCartney and Jackson.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
From when you were like 15?
Yeah.
All right, I jumped the gun some, but I guess we're going to do Rate the Reform now with staff.
Oh, feel the tunes. Feel it. Feeling it. Feel the groove. Bring that groove.
So what's the word, Stafford?
Picture this. A fourth grade girl has a crush on her middle-aged teacher. After much discussion with her best friend, she decides that she will propose to him. Huh. The proposal is all the class can talk about for days, and the class keeps cajoling the teacher to quote-unquote marry the 10-year-old. Finally, he agrees to a playground wedding during lunch. He's wearing a graduation gown and a clown bow tie, as requested by his students, and she is wearing a sheet draped to look like a wedding dress. Sadly, this story is true, and it happened at Plummer Motts Elementary School in Falmouth, Maine, a few days before school got out. After parents' complaints, though I must note none from parents of students actually in the groom/teacher's class, Both teacher and principal have written letters of apology to the parents. I think the teacher put it best when he said, "The fact that an adult would consent to, quote, marry one of his students, however light the intended context, shows a serious lapse in judgment." Yes, that is certainly one way of putting it. See, teach, you're the adult in the situation. And can you imagine if all your decisions were based on the peer pressure of 10-year-olds? See, the other problem here being that they're not your peers. But after all the stories I read this morning about principals stealing school money and students selling drugs and knifing each other in the hallways and other violence, this story seems more sad and tasteless than it does particularly horrible. So I gave it a C-. But let's hope summer vacation minimizes the possible psychological damage from this event for that poor little girl.
Okay, one question. Who presided?
Unclear. Unclear.
Did one of the students preside, or did they bring in somebody from outside?
Only you would think of such nuance, Rick. It's actually not in the news item that I found. I do not know who presided.
That is probably a suboptimal decision on the teacher's part.
Well, I guess so. So did this teacher keep his job?
Yeah. Yep, he's up. And I mean, as of now, this only happened a couple weeks ago, and we know, you know, school system bureaucracies are notoriously quick to make decisions about everything. So.
You know, I've only known one teacher from Falmouth. When I went through Harvard Ed with Pup Gold, there's a shout out to you there, Pupster. He was a former merchant marine guy. He was big, burly, and pretty rough and ready. I don't think he would have married a 10-year-old.
I'm speechless, really.
I know. Disturbing.
Christina, how's that for a kind of fare thee well, huh?
Yeah, send you off.
Sistina, I'd say when you're at your fancy business school at Chicago, see if you can't use management techniques to minimize the number of teachers marrying their 10-year-olds.
Good project. All right, I think that's probably all the time we have. All right, any final words, anyone? Christina, goodbye. Fare thee well.
Goodbye, listeners.
Yes, and remember to pick those nickels up on the side of the road, like the Irish advice.
Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to read the original Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Andy Smerick of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Thank you much.